From Courtside the Virtual Hardwood, it's the NLSC Podcast, episode number 372. Andrew with you once again. I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. My co-host and fellow NLSC team member is Derek. You may know him in the forum as DP3. And he's, of course, DP384 on Twitter.
Happy to be here. And I just wanted to say congratulations to the team at Namo Gamo, Josh and Dave, for getting roster editing in basketball classics, which I think that the game was fine and functional and fun without it. But that just adds a whole new dimension to customization and immersion and all that stuff. So just big congrats to them as they continue to update that game.
Isn't it great to see? Isn't it great to see something like that coming into basketball classics?
It is. My brother and I were talking about this last night because we were playing a game called Conan Exiles, which is like a multiplayer. It's like an MMO. And we're playing it, and they put through like a couple of recent updates. They put in like a 42 gigabyte update, another update, and they keep like updating, aspects of the game, giving new worlds, abilities, tweaking stuff. And it's just really nice to see these developers continue to update these games and also not put like prices around it. You know what I mean? So like, basketball classics, they didn't add this as like a paid update
DLC,
or anything like that. Yeah. They're like, you know what? Yeah. Or DLC or anything like that. And same thing with like that game, my example with Conan is it's like, you know what? These people spent this money on this game. They enjoy the game. Let's give them a little bit more. Let's keep updating the game, because how many times have you seen on Steam or on console games as well, because they can push through updates similar as well. Like, how many times have you seen developers just give up on games or not push through updates or keep the game vanilla, et cetera. So it's just really cool to see, that Josh and David Namo Gamo do that. And then, other companies as well.
It really is special. And of course, we talked to Josh and Dave in episode 342 and 343 of the NLSC podcast. We had them on again, and we'd love to have them on again for, I believe, the fourth time it will be. So we will definitely reach out to you guys, and we know you listen, and we'll be getting to one of your questions in the mailbag this week, actually. So definitely want to have you back on. But no, you're right. When they do it, or when anybody else does that, it's so much goodwill. And it means that the game has just come so far. I mean, I've said it before that when I played the game in early access, that I already thought it was a pretty fun experience, that it was already way ahead of a Double Dribble, for example, at that time in early access. Since it's gone to version 1.0, it's just gone from strength to strength. We've got the season mode, we've got the new story mode, or the second expanded story, I should say, and now roster editing, and pretty comprehensive roster editing as well for a game, as two people making that game, and for it being as simple as it is. And you're never going to have the depth of a 2K creator player, nor should you in that game. You don't need it, but I'm very impressed with what you can actually do, and they talked about what they were planning to do with the face editing at the time, and it really does work out quite well. So I was really happy to see it come through. And again, yeah, absolutely agree that they've continued to work on it. They haven't just let it go. They already achieved their dream of having the game out there on Steam and people responding to it positively, as so many rightfully do, us included. But for them to keep putting in that detailing and putting in that season mode, putting in roster editing, so that we can finally get rid of Mickey Janssen, we can put all the names in there, etc. Creating new teams as well, not just editing the original players, but adding new seasons and new teams to the roster, and then adding all the new players. It's really in depth, and you can save up to three rosters. Modding possibilities, Derek.
Sometimes it's the little things. How many times in the past have we played college basketball games where they just had the numbers where we wish we could type in names?
Mm. Yeah.
Right? Like, how many times, I wished I had that ability with a game like Coach K College Basketball where, I joked around with at one point on Twitter with Scott Pollard about it, because I showed a screenshot of him unofficially in Coach K College Basketball. And it, on Twitter, we had a brief interaction about it. And he, how cool would it have been for me to put on that game and have the ability to type in Scott Pollard under, instead of it just showing his number?
Eventually we could into the games, but those early games, yeah, you just had to live with it, or a game like College Slam, you could enter the names, but there was no way to save them. So every time you restarted the game,
Never
you had to put in
that.
Again.
Yeah, that always bothered me. That always bothered me that you could edit the names in College Slam, but there was no way to save.
No battery backup, yeah. Making it kind of pointless, really.
Yeah, there was another game called NCAA Final Four that came out, I want to say, in the mid-90s or early 90s for, and I brought this up on a prior podcast for Sega Genesis. And it had the ability to change the names, and we did. But again, there was no way to save it. So there was a point in time where we were like, keep the game on overnight so the names would stay and we wouldn't
Exactly.
have to put it back in and stuff like that. So no, it's stuff like that that a lot of and it sounds simple, but it's something that we wish that a lot of the older games had.
There's an NBA oriented one, TV Sports Basketball. It's the Cinemaware. It's in the Cinemaware collection if you ever get that on Steam. But it's the same thing that you can edit teams and players, but it doesn't save because it's for the Amiga. So you couldn't actually save it to disk, which again kind of defeats the purpose of having the edit players in there. I mean, it's fine if you want to do it for a season or whatever, but not being able to save those changes, yeah, it kind of sucks.
Yeah, College Slam has a great soundtrack. I know it's a random thought, but I don't know if people want to throw that on YouTube real quick, our listeners, and listen to the intro of College Slam. Really gets you pumped up for college basketball.
Yeah, it's
It's very immersive. Yeah.
I mean that was the case with so many video games in the 90s, basketball or otherwise.
Yeah, look at NBA Showtime, NBA on NBC. It has the full NBC intro.
John Tesh, yep.
It has the music. All of that stuff. I love that game. That's still, I got to be honest with you, that's probably top three arcade games ever for me. I absolutely love it. I know the bodies, people are like, oh, well, all the players looks incredibly jacked, but it's an arcade game. So
I do
I
actually
like it.
have a retrospective of that coming out soon. I've been editing my articles. I've always drafted them. Well, for the last couple of years, I've been drafting them in advance. But I've gone to the trouble of editing them about a month's worth, and I want to do a few more because, as I said to you before we started recording, I really want to get into some modding again, and I've just been not been able to put aside the time. So what I'm going to be doing over the next this weekend, or probably by the time this comes out, I will have already done it, is to schedule a bunch of my planned articles, edit them and get them scheduled over the next month or 6 weeks, and just stick to modding. Obviously recording the podcast every week with you, but stick to modding and make that time for those projects and really get them done. So that's something I'll be doing. But yes, one of the games that I'll be looking at for Way Back Wednesday is NBA Showtime, NBA on NBC. As you said, you've got the NBA on NBC theme, you've got Jim Fagan announcing it, you've got Tim Kitzrow announcing during the game. And obviously the rosters from the late 90s. How can you go wrong?
And the gameplay is great.
It's
It's really
very
fun,
similar to
fast
Hang Time,
paced.
yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, no, I
exactly. It's good stuff.
So before we get into our main discussion topic this week, just want to mention one more news item, which is NBA 2K21 received an update, the next-gen version of 2K21, or some people are already calling it the current gen, PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X/S. Basically, it's a very small update, Derek. It updates shadows in the city, and lighting during the day in the city. I'm sure you'll be very excited about that, and a couple other technical fixes. So it's mostly a hotfix update, this one. But yeah, they are still updating the next-gen version, the PS5 X, X1, XSX, I guess, version, the latest console version, shall we say. They are still updating that. Not really doing much with current gen.
Yeah, I mean,
We expected it.
I think this is just the norm. This is kind of what we expect. I do want to point out that, the season is winding down. The trade deadline is over. You're going to have maybe some late signings later in the season or something like that. Possibly, for playoff rosters or something like that. But otherwise, as far as like gameplay and whatnot, I think what you see is what you get, and it is what it is. I am going to say this, though. I have been playing NBA 2K21 a little bit more because, as you know, I've been modding it
Of course,
and,
yep.
throwing the player on the floor and messing with sliders a little bit. I've grown to like 2K21 gameplay better than NBA 2K20. And I'm talking about on current gen and next gen. But on, for the PC version, I think one thing that I notice with it is the players feel more, you feel like you have more control of the players, in my opinion, and there is a little bit less, like, sucking in canned animations in comparison to NBA 2K20. So I will say that I've been enjoying the PC version at times of NBA 2K21, and that's nice because it's kind of motivated me to mod the game a little bit more and, like, get some faces done, stuff like that.
I haven't been playing PC or PS4 as much. I've basically playing a lot of next-gen, a lot of my team. But as I have my frustrations because of the legacy issues and new issues as well. But for the most part, I have been enjoying it. I do agree that we're probably, what we see is what we get at this point. There's still going to be new content for my team, at least to the end of the season. It'll be interesting to see what happens beyond that, because 2K20, my team, is actually still receiving, well, not new content, but it's still getting new login bonuses every day, if nothing else. But I do imagine that possibly, I mean, at least till the end of the NBA Finals, we'll be getting seasons, and maybe through to perhaps the start of the off-season, or not sort of the off-season, the training camp, you know, almost to the release of 2K22, I would imagine. But yeah, as far as gameplay fixes and whatnot, tuning, maybe some minor fixes here and there, but we're probably going to see what we get. Not unusual for this time of the year.
Yeah, this is kind of what I expected. It is going to be interesting to see what happens with NBA 2K22 coming to PC, because as both of us anticipate it, we're expecting it to be the next gen version.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But I am very curious to see how much the file structure changes, if we can jump right in with modding, use some of the same tools. If you look at NBA 2K21 for next gen, it looks, and we've talked about this before, we've shown side-by-side screenshots and whatnot, the textures that they're using for the players and the body models and all that stuff look almost identical to NBA 2K21 for the PC. So if they stick with that format, I think we're going to be able to jump right in.
You know, it's not as crazy as it sounds, I think, because it's, like you say, they are very similar. They're pushing through the same scans on current gen as they are next gen with their player likeness updates. So it's definitely a possibility.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that, like, Luya, or how you pronounce it, on the forum, L-O-O-Y-H, he's made so many great tools, and I hope that he's around for NBA 2K22. And I also hope that Limnono is still around, whether to provide us with plugins or modifiers or and stuff like that. Like, those guys are amazing. I don't want to go, like, deep into this, but how amazing is it that we have tools in the first week of the game's release, usually?
Oh, it's so important. So important.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It's just unbelievable what these guys do. They create, because they have to program this stuff. They create a plugin where we can install the mods. You know, Luya, he creates NBA 2K tools so we can roster edit. You know, in the past, it's been Limnoto Modifier, who has, like, the modifier to add headbands, swap accessories, you know, add portraits, add change cyberface numbers, you know, all of this other stuff. And they push out these tools on week one. And I'm just blown away by it. I'm impressed by it every single year. It's unbelievable.
Very thankful for it, because, again, it's the modders obviously do a fantastic job in our community, but like you said, without the tools, we can't do we can't make the mods.
Right, and they release them for free, and yes. I appreciate that, because, you know, technically they could try to put those behind a paywall, and I mean, legally it's not something that they should be doing, but technically, I mean, that's something that a lot of people are doing. They're putting their mods behind paywalls. They're asking for money. They're saying, hey, PM me for money, you know, excuse me, PM me for the mod, and then they say, hey, there's a charge. So they could technically do that. But they're releasing these tools for free, and I really appreciate it.
Very much appreciated by all of the modding community, and perhaps we don't say that enough, so always willing to give the tool creators a shout-out on the podcast and articles and, yeah, in the forum, of course. So with the news out of the way, this week's main discussion topic is actually, well, it was actually submitted to us by Amuse, AmuseTV underscore on Twitter. Shout-out to you. Suggested for the mailbag, but we looked at it and thought, you know what? This is worthy of a main discussion topic, because there's a lot we can say about this, and I did say that on Twitter as well. I have quite a lot of thoughts, and I know you have thoughts as well. on this topic, and I'll read out the topic as it was presented to us on Twitter by Amuse. It says, seems like sports gaming is taking a backseat to competitive gaming, meaning it's all about user control and not about basketball, and how do we feel about that? And this is something that we've brought up before. I've mentioned it in articles, going back to some of the to Kenny and Arcane when they were on the podcast as well, with them playing online and the competitive scene as well with me with 2K Pro-Am and whatnot, or the Rec or the Playground. And yes, it does feel like that online competitive scene is really the focus of basketball gaming these days. So it's less about, as Amuse puts it, sports gaming or simulation, the simulation of the sport of basketball, and more the basketball in a video game sense. And that may sound a little bit strange, because obviously all basketball video games are, well, video games. But yes, as far as focusing on mechanics that are more about or more equivalent to other online competitive games rather than specifically basketball strategies, controls, and strategies that are very much related to a simulation of the actual sport. It's more about mastering inputs that could really apply to any video game is what I believe that he's getting at, and I've certainly noticed that as an issue. But that focus on that competitive online scene, competitive gaming, as opposed to sports gaming or sports sim gaming, simulating the NBA and the focus on back in the day when it was all about franchise mode and so forth, and putting the most realistic virtual basketball product out there. We have seen that change, Derek, and it really has come from that focus on the online multiplayer scene, the competitive scene.
Well, a few things. One, I appreciate the passion behind the question. I think he started it off with, I have so many questions. So, thank you, and thanks for listening into the show. And, anytime you have questions or or topics that you want us to touch on or anything, just let us know, because we love it and we love the interaction. Here's the problem with the whole, it's about user control. It's not. And it's more about artificial boosts and canned animations, and I think that's what's killing basketball video games. It's more about, what artificial boosts can you get? How high can you get overall in order to combine your overall with your artificial boosts? And how can you take advantage of all of that? And I think that's what's killing basketball video games in the true competitive scene, because it's not about, a level playing field. It's not about making the right basketball decision. It's not about strategy or anything like that. It's about exploiting the game, exploiting the artificial boosts. And I talked about this a little bit on the last podcast as well. And basically just taking advantage of that. My example, in the last podcast, I'm going to use it again. If you have, we've talked about Rim Protector, like a Rim Protector badge. If you are completely out of position and you're like on the opposite block and somebody drives in on the right block and you're on the left block and you have the Rim Protector badge and you try to jump, the game will magnetize you to that ball handler, even though you're completely out of position, and it will push you in like a canned animation in order to contest the shot or to get the block. If you don't have that and you're out of position, what ends up happening? You get beat just like you should because you're out of position. So that's not user control. That's the game forcing you to do an unnatural animation when you're out of position just because you have an artificial boost, right? So I think what's happened is user control is actually at its worst ever in basketball video games, as far as like controlling the individual player, because, and remember, I don't even play in the online scene, but I notice this stuff, when I'm playing offline with NBA teams, with badges and all of that stuff. I think that that's what's really, really hurting, true competitive gaming. True basketball, you don't see the strategy anymore. You don't see the trying to run certain plays or, utilize your teammates in a certain way or trying to get certain angles and all of that stuff or go to mismatches and all of that. You just, it's basically just, trying to avoid legacy issues, exploit the game, and get as many artificial boosts as possible in order to make yourself dominant.
It really is. And that metagaming, which we've talked about before, has become such a big part. What build do you have? What badges can you acquire? What badges do you pick? In fact, on next gen now, with your My Player, you can actually take badges off and respec the badges. Not the amount of badges, mind you, or the overall archetype, but you can remove a badge. So, I mean, I like the idea. I do like that idea because it's a problem in the past where people pick badges that were unsuitable. Now there are more ratings thresholds to actually earn specific badges, which again is a great idea for balance, at least in theory. So sometimes you can take a badge when you've got an upgrade, and if you find that you upgrade your ratings and that another badge would be better, you can take those badge upgrades off and put them on another one. So that's a good idea as far as having that system in the game. The problem, as you said, with that system is that it does come down to what artificial boosts you have for your player. It's less about what you're actually doing on the sticks. We touched on the myth of the skill gap last week. I have an article coming out about it as well in the next 4 weeks or so, in the next month. I'll be talking about that a little bit more. Always a topic to touch upon as we look at the quality of competitive gaming versus the offline experience as well. I think there are things, you know, and we did talk about this last week with the shot aiming in 2K22 and, of course, how it's worked out so far in 2K21. I think a mechanic like that is trying to put control in the user's hands, because if you master the aiming, you can get shots, you can make shots much more easily than relying on the dice roll or just hitting the old method of timing the shot and trying to get the green release. So, you know, there is merit to that, and they are trying to add some user control. The problem with that is that, as we said last week, it doesn't necessarily work out when you put that control in the CPU's hands, because the CPU can give itself green releases, give itself perfectly aimed shots. So you're dealing with a computer that can be more precise in its input than we can ever be outside of modded controllers, cheating controllers, which people are obviously doing. And I think.
Andrew, I understand that. Listen, I understand that, and I understand the CPU thing, and that's frustrating for us, right? But what happened? What was wrong with 2K15, 2K16, 2K17 shooting? What was wrong with the way it was, with the timing?
Nothing,
What was
as far as
wrong?
I'm concerned. I think it worked out just fine.
Right. Why are we trying to break that system? Why are we trying to implement something new that's clearly far more exploitable and unfair and doesn't mimic shooting at all? Like,
I mean,
it doesn't
well,
resemble.
that is the irony, is that they are trying to do it, but it is actually moving away from that. So that is the problem with focusing on these ideas for user control. The overall idea of giving users more control has merit, especially in the online scene. In theory, it's about stick skills, but it doesn't work out that way because you have the artificial boosts, you have animation selection. If you're going out for a dunk and you happen to have a back scratcher in the package and you're putting it behind your head for the dunk, it's so much easier to block. You may not want to have that pulled out, but it will just trigger one at random, even with the use of the pro stick to determine which kind of dunk you want. You will sometimes get a dunk that's not appropriate. And people, I saw a thread on Reddit actually recently where people were talking about the canned situations and the canned moments. It's the one I linked you to actually. And people were mentioning that they've seen from the opening tip pretty much, or that opening minutes of the quarter in the rec or 2K Pro-Am, by the animations that they're getting, they can tell that they're not going to get a fair shake throughout the game. So there's so many things under the hood beyond just the badges that are determining the success of the game and animation selection and all kinds of balancing going on behind the scenes, that there isn't really that control over the game, that user control of the stick skills. So their current approach is not having the results they want. It's not working offline either, obviously. But simply focusing on this competitive scene, and we go back to the official Instagram account actually showing people how to curry slide, which is a big exploit this year, much like the old zigzag cheese. So they're actually pushing that. They are, to a certain extent, encouraging exploitable strategies and moves. It's becoming about these moves that are OP, whether it's animations you assign or badges or whatever. So there is definitely a focus on that element. And you look at games, I guess like Fortnite, where you can equip certain, I believe, I may be wrong about this because I don't play Fortnite, so this is me speculating. It may not be Fortnite, maybe another game, but augmentate whenever any kind of shooter where you can get the augmentations to boost your abilities, shot accuracy or armor or whatever. It's much like the boosts and the badges that you can get in my career in NBA 2K, or animations, whatever you can do, that meta gaming to get the advantage. It's all about that. So the focus on the competitive scene in general, it has got the game in its current state, I would have to say.
I remember a couple things. I remember a statement made by Mike Wong, and he had stated that momentum is not programmed into the game. I completely don't believe that. Like you said, there's things under the hood. There's just...
Definitely, yeah.
You talked about the Reddit thread where the people are like, they feel like they can tell how this game is going to go, or how the situation is going to go, or whatever, how the stretch is going to go. My brother and I get that all the time. And you go from a situation where you're down like 25 or 30 points or something like that, and then all of a sudden, all the shots you were missing before, all the same shots you were taking are suddenly falling with everybody, and you're like climbing back into the game all of a sudden, and then your opponent is all of a sudden just missing everything, right? And I absolutely do think that that stuff is under the hood. I think that there's
comeback logic,
a competitive balance that they're trying to achieve that they don't want to talk about, but that they want in the game. And I definitely believe momentum is a thing. All three of us, my brothers, we all feel the same way about that. The other thing that I wanted to mention was, one of the things that that's the most frustrating with, you were talking about legacy issues with some of the most recent 2Ks, is dropping the ball all the time. And the reason I thought about this is because you mentioned back scratchers, and you mentioned how easily the ball gets dislodged. Come on. Like, these kids are taught at a very young age of hoop to grip the ball, right? Like, to, you know, hold the ball with a purpose and, you know, protect the ball and all of this stuff. And then, you know, you play NBA 2K, and any hint of, you know, contact, and this is really bad in 2K19. It might be the worst in 2K19. We've noticed it a lot recently. Like, any hint of contact with another player, and your guy often just drops the ball, or he's in the post and you try to like face up and then go one way, and then he drops the ball and you get slowed down into like this slow pickup animation, or it ends up being a steal. Or like you're driving to the hoop and you go up for a dunk, and you're going up for a two-handed dunk, and you have like a guard that's underneath you, and he jumps and he easily dislodges the ball from you. Like, he just touches the ball and it just falls out of your hands. That's ridiculous. And I don't understand why that's part of the game. And I don't understand why it's so frequent and why it hasn't been really corrected. You know what I mean? But it is one of those things where, like, you're dribbling up court and there's a player in your vicinity, and you dribble. It's almost like you dribble off the air and the ball, and you stumble, and then the ball goes loose.
There's a lot of that. It reminds me a bit of the guarded shot in 2K17. I always forget the name.
Protected
shot, that's right. It's kind of like that, where it's like players don't necessarily... I mean, there were times that you can force players into a tough shot, but it got to the point where you couldn't take any kind of contested shot in 2K17 without it being a protected shot.
Luckily, they got rid of that.
Mm.
But, you know, with 2K17, it's something I wish... I tried to do this. I tried to go into the animations file and get rid of it. Like, I tried to alter the animation. But it's a thing where you have plenty of blue sky. Your defender is a couple feet away from you. And you try to go up for a shot, and the game forces you into a fadeaway. It forces you into a protected shot. And your chances of hitting that shot is so dramatically decreased, they hardly ever go in. And it's like, listen, in real life, if a player... And by the way, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the height either. The guy, you could be a 7-footer, and the guy standing in front of you is 6 feet. Is 6 feet tall, and it makes you fade away.
It's false balance, really. In real life,
if there's a guy right in your face and you want to shoot over him, you don't fade if you don't want to, right?
Mm.
So it's a thing that where you lost. You know, he talked about user control. Luckily, they got rid of that, but like that's unrealistic as all hell, and that's not giving the user control in NBA 2K17. It's the worst aspect of shooting in NBA 2K17, the protected shot.
It is
very unrealistic.
Something else I want to note, because obviously from a mechanical standpoint, from a programming standpoint, focusing on the competitive scene does result in certain mechanics, certain controls that cause these problems. A focus on the curry slide or the animations, the boosts, whatever, for success. You know, if you equip this animation, you can't manipulate the frames quick enough. Things like that. That's a big thing in the online scene. To the point that Mortal Kombat 11, as I've mentioned before, actually shows you the technical aspects, shows you how to frame cancel how many frames a certain move has, and how to counter that from a very technical level. And it's quite interesting that they do that. 2K doesn't have that kind of onboarding for a start, so that's a real problem. So it really comes down to somebody in the community working it out, or trial and error, which, of course, and not to beat a dead horse, but does come down to making different builds and getting different animations, and that's all comes down to buying VC, microtransactions. So it's all, the moves and the combatants have in Mortal Kombat, they have already. There are some augmentations for that, but separate issue. But beyond that, beyond the microtransactions, beyond the mechanics, there is the attitude. And this is something that has really permeated the online scene over the past few years, really starting with 2K18, but it's just ramped up since then. And it comes down to, and you see it a lot online because of the city, the neighborhood, the playground, etc. You see a lot of people standing around not wanting to play, judging each other based on obviously what they're wearing, literally, and also their my rep level, their whatever it is in each particular game. These days it's my rep. It used to be, I think it was just called rep back in the day. But focusing on that, focusing on overall rating, focusing on is this person good enough to play with, and not really just wanting to get into a game and compete. You know, nobody likes to lose, but part of competing, it brings the possibility of a loss. But because nobody wants that on their record, because then they don't get games, they don't jump into games. So you've got all these people, instead of actually playing the game, just running around the virtual city, the virtual neighborhood, whatever, not actually getting into it. And it also, something else I saw on Reddit as well that I thought was a very salient point, was that there are a lot of people who think they're the wannabe NBA 2K League gamers. You know, they want to treat the home version of 2K League, which is Pro-Am or the Rec, as the 2K League. They have designs of making the league one day. They think they're going to be a pro gamer. They may or may not. Probably in many cases may not. And so they take a very selfish attitude into these online team play modes. And the games really encourage that, especially because you have to grind for badges and grind for VC. You don't lose this player one mentality. I put a Monday Tip-Off article about this a couple of weeks ago, about the ready to not be player one online. People take that mentality in. The way the games are set up, they're not encouraging team play. They're not encouraging even competition to actually get in there, because if you get in there and lose, it ruins your record and your stats, and you don't get the badge points or whatever. So we don't really have this healthy competition. There's a lot of toxicity in the scene, and that does come... I mean, there's always going to be that to a certain extent in an online community and online gaming, but the way that 2K is designed with its online scene and lack of matchmaking and everything else, it really does perpetuate this toxicity.
But that guy that they're looking at, that they're saying, I don't want to play with him, or that guy's not good enough, in actuality, could very well be much better at the game.
Absolutely.
No, yeah. Basketball and be better, but because he didn't put in the money and doesn't have the time in order to... get his player all of those artificial boosts and up to, a 90 overall or whatever, in that scene, he's looked at as a lesser player. And that's the problem, is that guy, if that guy had put in, and this is why it's encouraged, if that guy had put in the money to upgrade his character and to get those boosts, all of that stuff to really pump his overall up and all of that stuff, And he was still standing there, and they took him. That guy, like I said, is probably a better could be a better player.
Absolutely,
it's just unbelievable. You know why I stay away from the online scene. Like I have no interest in playing online. I also think that we've talked about this in the past, and this goes back to his question. So kind of circling back, he talked about user control. I think what happened is because the online scene is so big now, and because that's what's promoted, and they're trying to get as many people online as possible, is they've encouraged single player use and forgot how important the, you know, the 5-on-5 experience is. And I think because of the enhanced focus on that single player usage experience, the NBA product and offline has kind of fallen along the wayside, and there's more issues now in the 5-on-5 product, because it's more of a focus on single player use instead of all five players in cohesion on the floor.
Absolutely. And to that point, and this circles back to something else we've talked about before, the OP My Team cards and the lack of attention to player abilities, both in the default rosters and certainly with the My Team cards, because there is a competitive online scene in My Team as well. Every year they have the $250,000 tournament that comes out each year, and you have to qualify for that playing My Team. So there is that online scene there, that competitive online scene there. And there it is about, again, having the badges, that they brought those back in 2K21, the OP cards that don't really reflect the player's abilities, but they're the cards that you want if you want to be competitive online. And that is certainly not about basketball, or not a realistic representation of basketball and the skills of the players, past and present. So, again, focusing on what can we do to have these souped-up competitors online locking horns, that takes precedence over what can we do to make sure that these players, as we're representing them in the game, whether they be the default rosters or My Team cards, you know, it's not about making them as realistic as possible. It's about how can we utilize these in a way that's going to enhance the competitive online scene.
Right. It's not about seeing somebody has, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and saying, oh, I got a plan for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar because this is how he played in real life. It's, they have a guy who's going to be able to do the Curry slide. He's a 7-footer. It's not about Kareem anymore. It's about, you know, I have to prepare for a 7-footer who can do the Curry slide and bomb threes from 35 feet. Right. So, like, and like you said, that some lineups can be flooded with those cards, with those OP cards and stuff that play nothing like their real life counterpart. So it definitely, and how do you get those cards? Oftentimes people spend absurd amount of monies on pack, mm-hmm. on packs, right?
Yep.
Or buying them straight up. So like, yeah, it's, I hate that aspect of basketball gaming now. I absolutely hate it. I'm really glad, I've said this before, I'm really happy that my interests are more offline and that I enjoy modding and that we have all of the different titles that we have, like 2K17, 16, some of the past titles, 11, 8, all of that stuff, like, and some of the old live titles. I like the fact that I don't have to depend on it. And I think what happens is these kids now coming up, the teenagers, young adults and whatnot, they feel like they depend on that online scene, that online component. That's what's marketed to them. That's they want to play with their friends. They want to be able to get on there and all of that stuff. So
it's where the fresh content comes in, is it not? It's where the updates come in.
It's where the updates come in, the fresh content, exactly. So like I said, I'm glad I play the way that I play, because if I had to depend on that, I'd even be more sour, I'd say.
Yeah. No, it's definitely clouded my opinions of the games, or affected my enjoyment of the games, I should say. I do mostly play My Team single player, which has its own issues, of course, but it's generally a better experience. When I have ventured online to Triple Threat Online, which is usually just to fill an item on the agenda, get the XP to level up in the season and get new rewards, I will sometimes jump online and occasionally it's tolerable. Most of the time it's not. Most of the time I would say it's even worse than online team play modes connected to my career. But with that being said, I have jumped on, and I see a lot of people using the same strategies, which you can try as much as you can, but between lag and exploitable strategies, it's very hard to counter. But they'll do the same Curry slide back and forth, zigzag cheese, running three-pointer, green release. They do it over and over again. And look, when somebody does that with a player like Steph Curry or a Damian Lillard, players who do dance around with their dribbling on the perimeter and put people in a spin and put them in a spin cycle and just, you know, go for an off-balance three and they can hit it, that's fine. But then when it's Anton Jamison doing that, and Jamison could hit threes, don't get me wrong, but Jamison's play style was not akin to Stephen Curry, you know, quite frankly, or something ridiculous like a Kareem, like David Robinson doing it. It's just, when you can use the same strategy with anybody, It feels very, again, a very homogenized experience, as we've said before. It's very unrealistic. How do you counteract this with actual players, you know, with strategies? It's very frustrating. And it's, again, you can see it, you can do your best to to do it, but because it is an exploit, you are going to get hit by it every so often. And if you don't play that way, you are at a disadvantage. So you are punished for trying to play proper basketball, which in a basketball sim, allegedly, is very frustrating. So I do avoid that scene as much as possible. But the problem is, even if I avoid it, and you and I avoid it, there are people who are going to want to play it, and they deserve the best experience possible. And this is something that I think people miss when they say, well, just don't play it. Which you and I, we can make that choice, as anybody can. But these are, in theory, fun experiences for people who enjoy that kind of competition. So it should be as good as it possibly can be for them, with proper matchmaking and proper balance. So I want to see these modes be as good as they possibly can be. The whole game be as good as it possibly can be, even if I can avoid certain aspects myself. It's not just about me.
Right. And get NBA Live in there. Like, get them competing. Get 2K upping their game. I think that's going to be a big deal. I do. I also think that it could possibly make NBA 2K more fair to the gamer if they have a competitor in there that's actually competing from a gameplay depth and fairness perspective. So, yeah, and I do. That we've talked about this. You know, I don't play the online modes. I can't stand them. I can't stand the way they're run. There's so much toxicity around them. I don't think there's proper balance. I don't think there's true skill gap. But I give a crap. Like, I absolutely 100% give a crap. And that's why I talk passionately about it on this podcast, as do you. But, you know, I care about how these modes run and the memories people are creating with this game and, you know, them having as limited frustration as possible, you know, when they're playing these games. And I want the players represented properly and whatnot, and history represented properly. It's marketed as a simulation basketball video game. So yeah, care about your fellow gamers. Speak up if these things bother you. It's not about just, yeah, well, don't play the mode. It's, hey, listen, these things need to be fixed in order for, in big picture wise, people to have a better experience and for it to be more fair to them.
Since you brought up NBA Live, and of course we've said it before, and I absolutely agree that competition is vital. Competition is going to be good for everybody, the consumers, the quality of both games. You know, we absolutely want to see it. But with that being said, do you think there would be value in NBA Live focusing more on that traditional experience? I wrote an article about this a long time ago, and it's an idea that's continued to pop up in the back of my mind. Because I do. I think there'd be value that if 2K is going to go in this direction and sacrifice some sim for the online scene, for competitive gaming, if Live brought it back to that traditional simulation experience, they could probably win a lot of people back, people who feel that 2K has gone too far in that direction. So, I mean, you're still going to have that online component in Live. You need to have something that caters to that crowd as well. But if you take that more traditional approach, is that something that NBA Live could do to distinguish it now that 2K has kind of slipped in that department?
No, absolutely. I want to surprise you. Have you ever had, we talked about guacamole, how much I don't like it.
Yeah. Last podcast.
Have you ever had chocolate-covered raisins?
I don't know, but I used to like raisins, or sultanas as we call them in Australia. I used to love them as a kid, and I've really gone off them. So the idea disgusts me right now, if nothing else.
I'm eating chocolate covered raisins while we're actually on this podcast a little bit, because they're easy to eat and they don't interrupt my tone and whatnot. And I just got to tell you, these are amazing.
Fair enough. They look
good too. But yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. Chocolate covered raisins. That's the food of choice for this episode.
We're not being sponsored by chocolate covered raisins, but we could be.
Exactly. Reach out to us, because
hit us up.
I'll ask the pro form. Absolutely. I think the thing is that, like you said, they can't get rid of the online aspect of it. They have to have, like, the one was a good idea. It was well received as well. You know, they can keep court battles in there and everything, but they absolutely can, you know, target a more sim approach and a more fair approach and a less artificial boost approach. I think the two biggest things that I want to see with NBA Live as far as user control is less emphasis on artificial boosts, so less emphasis than what 2K does, but also less canned animations than what we had in NBA Live 19, where, you know, you would drive the lane and they would send you into this wild canned animation where you just kind of throw the ball up towards the hoop, and then more often than not it would go in and you're like, wait a minute, that shouldn't have happened. Like, just more control in that aspect. you know, give people the opportunity to have camera relative controls and absolute as opposed to just absolute, which is what they've had in the past. That way it caters to the default broadcast camera that they put people on. You know what I mean? So don't give us a default view or don't give us broadcast camera views without a control scheme that actually fits it, you know, for some gamers. So there's definitely some quality of life things that they can do in that regard. But the biggest thing is put more emphasis on 5-on-5 simulation and lessen the amount of artificial boosts. And at the same time, like I said, make it so we have more control and less canned animations. And I think that NBA Live could shine if they do that.
And of course, those deep modes that we've mentioned once or twice in the past. As far as 2K is concerned, I mean, irrespective of whether Live makes that strong comeback and can light a fire under them, make them worried that people are going to switch to NBA Live, what can 2K do? Because obviously this has become a very big part of the game, the online competitive scene. You've established this style of play that a lot of people, you know, a lot of people do defend the stick aiming. You know, as much as the polls favored taking it out, there's also been some backlash. If you look in the comments, we talked about that last week. So there are people that like the current approach and feel that it should move further in this direction, that it should be more about who cares about realism. It should be about simply competition and stick skills with whatever the sticks allow you to do, basically. So there's competing philosophies, competing parts of the user base. So trying to cater to everybody is easier said than done. What can 2K do to actually fix the situation? Because again, they're going to be quite blunt, piss off people both ways. They're going to annoy people both ways, you know? So how do you strike that good balance? That is the challenge ahead of 2K.
2K created this monster.
They made this mess. They got to clean it up.
If they had gone the way that they were doing in like 2K16 and 2K17, and they had just, you know, enhanced those features or just tweaked those and whatnot and kept it more along those lines and everything, that's what people would be into right now, right? So they created this monster. I think what ends up happening is you can wean people off of it, you know, take some of the artificial aspects of it out and make it more skill-based. You could try a complete overhaul one year and say, hey, listen, you know, this is going to be, you know, what's funny, I just want to bring this up. So I don't know if you remember the 2K17 developer blog. I encourage people to look it up. In one of the 2K17 developer blogs, Mike Wong said that NBA 2K17, the entire goal of NBA 2K17 was to make it the most skill-based game they could. Like, skill gap. Like, that's what it was. And
they say that every year.
But think about how much control you had in NBA 2K17. You love 2K17.
I do.
Think about the skill gap in that and how more fair it was when you were playing and how you actually had to use more basketball strategy and how, you know, you just had overall more control over your destiny and over your player, and it wasn't as dependent on artificial boosts and all of that stuff. And then now think about what it is today, right? It's proof that you don't need that the way they have it now, because the way in 2K17 it worked and people did love it. Think about all the positive feedback NBA 2K17 got. Like, we see way more negative comments now. Think about the feedback NBA 2K16 got and whatnot for its gameplay and user control and its mechanics and all of that stuff. Think about how NBA 2K14 for next gen, as far as like the gameplay aspect of it, how many compliments that got. So they don't have to make it this way. They created this monster, and you can either wean people off of it and take a more sim approach each year, or you can just scrap the current system and say, hey, with NBA 2K22 or NBA 2K23, this is the direction we're moving. But the thing is, and you pointed this out, this is what they want, because this is what's making people spend more money. This is what's creating an atmosphere that says, okay, well, you don't want to be that 70 overall guy or that guy with no artificial boosts or very few artificial boosts standing on the sideline that nobody wants to play with. Oh, you want to play? Pony up.
You don't want to be wearing the brown shirt and gray slacks. You want to have some great clothes. You want to have the, you know.
Right, exactly. You want to be fly. You want to look. Do people still say that, fly?
Let's show our age and roll with it anyway.
Yeah, you want to look, you know. I would even go back further. Funky? I don't know. You want to look.
Your drip, you know, you got to have the right drip, you know. It's
right. Yeah, exactly. You want to look lit? Is that better? Because I think that's what kids still say now. If you want to look fire, pony up money.
Yeah.
So that's the thing is there's a method behind the madness, and there's a reason why the systems are in place. And unfortunately, I think the only thing that can make them take some of it away is a true competitor getting into space and doing it the right way and keeping them honest and saying, hey, this can work. And then gamers kind of migrating over to that new system and saying, okay, this game is great. 2K's gameplay has gotten stale. The mechanics have gotten stale. This is a game I can jump into right away and have fun with and not have to pony up more money. So like, and I don't have to spend my own personal money to, you know, look more fire. Or lit, or whatever.
Or fly, yeah, that's right. Come fly with me. Come look fly with me. Yeah.
Listen to the guy, chocolate-covered raisins, yeah.
Sponsored by. You're right. I mean, what do you do? They're not going to back off that. It's too much of a cash cow for Take-Two. So you have to, anything we suggest has to work around that. And we've talked about that before as well, that whenever we throw out these ideas, we have to sell them to 2K on how they can sell it, I suppose. So That's not going to change. It's going to be difficult, as you said, without a competitor, a legitimate competitor in the space. As far as what I think they can do, obviously they need to stand firm on a few ideas. If people complain that they can't do cheesy stuff, who cares? They will adapt. They will adapt to basketball strategies. If that is your vision, stick to the vision. I mean, if you are the only game in town, gamers will have to adapt to that as much as anything else. So take the right approach, and gamers can just, they can and will learn to love that and succeed that way. Beyond that, it's like I hate to sound like a broken record on the podcast or in my articles, but proper matchmaking and ranking is so important. Throwing everyone in there at once and just letting everybody sort out matchmaking themselves has led to this toxicity. It's led to people, you got to get good, but at the same time you don't have the opportunities. How do you get good? By playing the game. But you can't play the game because people want you to get good before they'll play with you. And so the vicious cycle repeats. And it's a catch-22 that so many people don't point out when they defend the lack of matchmaking. You need the matchmaking. You need to make sure there's less toxicity in the way that the rec is implemented and pro-am and the playground. And if you do that, then sure, you can cut down that on the toxicity by allowing people to learn at their own pace, to get good, to improve. The newcomers can play with each other, the novices, the intermediate players can play with each other, and you level up and you go to the higher competition, etc. I know there's all kinds of controversy with school-based matchmaking and everything. There's a way to make it fair for everybody. Look into those ideas to make it fair for everybody. And you implement matchmaking, you implement balance. You look at the things that are ruining the game, you address those, you address the toxicity, you address the lack of balance, the homogenized style, the exploits, the lack of matchmaking, and suddenly you've got a much friendlier online scene. If you promote friendliness and good competition, healthy competition, as opposed to bragging rights and, you know, drip, and who's got the best record, and who's a maxed out MyRep, and who's a 99 overall, by focusing on that, they focus on the individual, they focus on individual goals, bragging, and rather than actual coming together to play as a team and to have that style of basketball that really wins games. Because I can tell you that when people get into the rec and they're trying to play the hero, they try to play hero ball, it does not work. If they can promote a style of online team play that is both successful and unselfish and really push the appeal of that and have the matchmaking and all the mechanics to back that up, I think it can improve. But of course, if that ever comes in any way at the expense of the bottom line of making money, yeah, that is the unfortunate reality that we may not see an improvement there.
I was about to say, how much money are they going to lose?
Yeah.
Let's just be honest. That's what it really comes down to. And it sounds cynical and it sounds terrible for us to say, but, you know, we're just calling it what it is. I think that we're not going to get any better in the short term. with this stuff unless a true competitor comes into the space and keeps them honest, because true competition actually breeds excellence, whether it be in the basketball gaming space or in any other aspect. So yeah, we'll see what happens. Like I said, I'm just glad I don't play online.
Yeah,
I feel bad for those who do, but I'm glad that that's not something that I depend on as far as my basketball gaming habits go.
The one last thing I'll throw out there is that there is a very strong objection to the toxicity online, to the selfishness. So with such a movement, I feel like it could be more of a movement that people freeze out ball hogs, that they say, oh, okay, if you're going to do that, you're not getting the ball. It's an uphill battle, you know, there's no maybe about it. It is an uphill battle to do that. But it does seem there's a lot of people on Reddit who are speaking out about this, who are frustrated. Obviously, the game needs to back us up with proper matchmaking and other mechanics. But as far as attitudes, if we can, as a community, promote a more friendly attitude and the idea of jumping into games with each other, like, yes, look, I'll accept a loss if it means, you know, getting to play and hone my skills and build up my player. Look, someone's got to win and someone's got to lose. We all try to win, and in the pursuit of wins, sometimes, you know, nobody's undefeated. We are going to get some, well, a few boxes are, but that's another story. In the pursuit of wins, there will be setbacks, there will be losses. If we as a community can adopt better attitudes and just say, well, forget those toxic players and actually promote these good attitudes and this style of play, maybe we can affect change. And 2K can see that and say, well, okay, that's who we'll cater to. I don't know. It's worth a try.
How many people would you say are impacted by, and we see thousands of people who comment on these posts or like them or share them or whatever. How many people do you think are impacted by Ronnie2K and other influencers who on social media, because that's where everybody is now, who are promoting, you know, this is what you need to do to get your logo. This is what you need to do to reach this status. This is what you need to do to be cool or popular in the game, or to, you know, the et cetera, to show out and all that stuff. And these are the fits you need to wear. I think that social media and social media personalities and the attention aspect of playing these games and all of this stuff and the rise of influencers and the rise of people like Ronnie2K and everything, I think that dramatically impacts the games as well.
Totally agree. It goes back to what I said. It's about your MyRep, about the clothes you wear, about the overall, whether you've got a logo. You know, can you stand out as an influencer in the community? It's really pushing this personal glory narrative and goal over this concept of online team play, which is what the mode's supposed to be about. So, no, I totally agree.
Yeah. And here's the thing, too, is you can be an influencer, a promoted influencer, have a logo, all of that stuff, and dominate in the game, have a high overall, all of this stuff, millions of views on your YouTube over time, or, you know, interactions on social media, and you cannot be that great at the game.
Sure.
You're just loaded with artificial boosts. Yeah, sometimes you've been given gimmies. You've paid your way to a high overall, all of that stuff, and you quote unquote make fire content, which I don't consider fire. But yeah, that's the thing that sucks about it. You know, that which throws skill gap all up, you know, completely out the window.
So I think it really does come back to bringing some more basketball back to the game of video games, because it is focusing on everything else and how to compete with Fortnite and how to compete with Call of Duty and all these other games and the online competitive scene and esports and everything else. The focus is pulled in many directions, and sometimes it's no longer about, or it certainly feels like it's no longer about having this realistic representation of basketball, which is what 2K built its reputation on, as Live floundered in so many ways. 2K built their reputation on being the most realistic game, the best representation of basketball and the NBA, with from its franchise modes to everything else. So I would love to see them get back to that, but it does come down, unfortunately, to you know, the bottom line, which is moolah, which is money. But as you say, we shall see.
Money is the root of all evil. It really is.
So with that being said, we have now come to our favorite segment that we love to do every week, and that, is, of course, the mailbag.
No, absolutely. We have some leftover questions. And we obviously just used Amuse TV's question as the main topic. So keep them coming, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Podcast at NBA-live.com or also on our various social media, the NLSC on Facebook and Twitter. We'll, of course, mention these at the end of the show as well, but basically anywhere you can get in touch with us, including, of course, our forum and comments on the news bulletins where these podcasts are posted. Anywhere you can get in touch with us, hit us up. But with that being said, we are going to get to another question from Sega Geek Navare from the forum. Thank you once again for all the questions. Never apologize for sending in too many. We'd rather have too many than too few. Just keep them coming. We'll get to them eventually. Have we ever played the NBA Jam games by Acclaim on Nintendo 64 when they tried to make it more serious or more sim? And what were our thoughts on them? I do own those games for 64. I have played them. I will have Wayback Wednesday content coming out of them in probably sometime this year. But before then, I would love to talk about them, Derek. Yeah, have you played those games?
I have. And you being a big fan of the NBA Jam series, I know that your thoughts might be a little bit more severe than mine. I put them down pretty quick. And the reason is because what they did is, like he said, they tried to do a more sim-oriented, five-on-five type approach. And the gameplay just didn't work, in my opinion. It didn't suit, that style didn't suit NBA Jam. And you have the very strange shooting animations where the ball like has really high arc on the shots. And it just kind of, it looks like it's floating in the air. It's very strange physics on those games. I got to be honest with you, I'm just not a fan. I need to revisit them, but I don't think that worked, like what they were trying to do with those games.
I mean, I agree 100%. And look, I love revisiting old games, even bad ones or troubled ones, interesting to check out. Like I said, Jam It, which is not NBA, not to be confused with NBA Jam, is a terrible game, but it is a very funny one at the same time. So I will look forward to getting that in time, but that's for another time. The NBA Jam games by Acclaim, in general, there's only one which came out on PS2. It's in 2003. It's unofficially called NBA Jam 2004, but it's just another one that is called NBA Jam, kind of a reboot. It's probably their best effort. But once they got the name from Midway. Midway continued to do their Jam-style games with Hang Time, the aforementioned, as we said on the show, NBA Showtime, NBA on NBC, NBA Hoops, with a Z, or a Z, if you prefer. And those games were more in the Jam spirit. Acclaim's games, Extreme was kind of rough. It was trying to go 3D. I'll get to that in time as well, in Wayback Wednesday, I'm sure, in the podcast. But it was rough. Jam 99 2000... going in that direction, trying to be more sim, and being nowhere near NBA Live 99 or 2000 as far as a sim game quality. And that was the real problem. Not only was it not the NBA Jam style, not the NBA Jam brand, but they didn't do it well. And they didn't do the sim part well, they didn't do the arcade part well. And in fact, the only part of that that they did well was the fact that if you chose arcade or sim, it changed the menu from a real funky, shall we say, Jam-style menu to a more serious one for the Sim-style, which is kind of interesting. When the menu is the most interesting part of the game, though, Derek, that is kind of a problem. As you said, mechanically, not very impressive at all. The arcade style was basically like the arcade mode in NBA Live 99 and 2000 around that time, where it's still the normal animations, they just jump a little bit higher. You've got the on-fire mechanic, you've got less rules. The collision detection was terrible, trying to shove players wasn't good. 5-on-5 doesn't work very well for arcade games. 2-vs-2 and 3-vs-3 work a lot better in that regard. Even when we've made arcade mods for NBA Live and NBA 2K over the years, there's value in doing that, but you can never really get that Jam feel, that NBA Street feel. It really has to be 2-on-2 or 3-vs-3. So it just, yeah, it fails an arcade game. As a sim game, it was even worse because they weren't used to doing it. The AI was just not good. The collisions trying to defend in the arcade space or in the sim space, the sim style, just didn't work. It didn't have anything that made it NBA Jam, basically, and it didn't have anything that made it a true competitor to NBA Live or NBA In the Zone or any of the other NBA Action and any of the sim games of the time. It was just a complete flop in both respects. Yeah, it's a real shame that that Acclaim got the NBA Jam name, because for a while there, they really sullied the NBA Jam name, and they're interesting games to revisit, but they are probably among the worst not just arcade games, but possible games that I've played, at least as far as mainstream ones. There are some ones, some one-off ones, like a kid sports basketball that is truly wretched. A Jam It is pretty horrible as well. But as far as the big name games, those mainstream releases, Derek, I'd say they rank there among the worst, and certainly the biggest flops, considering what they were following on from and what they were trying to do.
Yeah, there's a game called RBI Baseball 20 and 21. And they made them, I think, all going back to RBI Baseball 14. For you guys who are listening to the podcast, you may remember NES RBI Baseball, which I spent a ton of time with. The game that I think it was released in like 1988 or something like that. And RBI Baseball it's kind of a loose sim. And they released RBI Baseball 21 again. I had bought 20. And what they did was they tried to do very similar to what NBA Jam did in the late 90s with those games, is they tried to create a arcade / sim baseball game. So something in between, say, Super Mega Baseball and MLB The Show. And it just doesn't work. You have the real players, but you have this style that has like real MLB rules and whatnot, but also arcade gameplay from a hitting standpoint, from a mechanical standpoint, all of that stuff. And it just doesn't really work. In my opinion, in some of those games, you have to just go one way or the other. You either go the Super Mega Baseball way or MLB The Show 20 way. You know,
agreed.
That's the way I feel about those NBA Jam games, is they tried to do kind of what RBI Baseball did. They tried to say, okay, we're going to put arcade elements into a 5-on-5 game, and we're going to do a mixture between arcade and sim, and it just didn't work. Neither was executed properly either. Right, like you had stated, you know, they didn't do well on the sim front, they didn't do well on the arcade front, so it's a combination of two faulty systems being put together. If I remember correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't remember a season mode, like an 82 game season mode or a thorough season mode either in those NBA Jam games, correct me, or stat keeping.
I'd have to know that. I it was a very primitive tournament mode of a kind.
Yeah, it was like a tournament thing.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, if you're going to do that, if you're going to say, okay, we're going to make this 5-on-5 and we're going to use the real license and everything, you know, why would you not give an 82-game season, right? Why would you not go that extra step? And that's what I mean. That's why it's a problem going, like, doing arcade / sim and everything. Why not give stat keeping? At that point, they had that in video games as well.
So in theory, mixing and matching concepts could come up with a very interesting hybrid of the two, but there are some concepts that are just at odds with each other. We've seen that NBA Live 99 didn't really know whether it wanted to be a street or an NBA Live game. Playgrounds has kind of implemented some of those sim mechanics we've talked about before in an arcade game. But this is an extreme version of it, of taking two concepts and trying to marry them together that just didn't work.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that I admire efforts like this. Like, I do. I think it's something, it's good to try, but it has to be implemented properly and the mechanics have to work and it has to be fun. I didn't find those games fun. That's the thing. I don't find the gameplay fun. I don't think that that it works well the way that they designed it. I would love to revisit it though. I may do that now that you brought that up.
Well, if nothing else, whenever somebody brings up an old game, we have to play it again. So I do want to do those Wayback Wednesday. I do want to do those Wayback Wednesday features, and will at some point. They're on the list. They're in the collection, so they will be getting covered in depth with a written article or video at some point. Very happy to cover it on the podcast as well, and kind of a preview of that of those articles. I'll check some of my details that I mentioned. I'm trying to think of the top of my head after I got them and tested them to make sure my copies were working, and then realized, yes, this is why I skipped those games back in the day, because as soon as I got them. And look, admittedly, playing them years later, well, I think I had played them at the time, but and just realized, yep, no, I'm not gonna stick with it. But there were times when I think, well, you know, is it, because nostalgia does cloud our judgment at times, or lack thereof. So certainly I thought, well, is this a case where I just don't have the same nostalgia that I do for Live 2000 and I'm putting Live 2000 on a pedestal and looking down on this because it wasn't live? But no, that is a very That is a correct, a very accurate assessment of those two games, unfortunately. But I mean, that being said, I'm not disappointed. I knew their reputation. I recalled playing them a little bit back in the day, or certainly over the years at some point. Whether I rented them or something, I'm not sure. But when I played them again, yes, that's right. I was right about this. And his reputation is absolutely, and the reviews are absolutely earned. But at the same time, I'm not disappointed to have them in the collection. I do enjoy collecting, obviously, as you do too. So dusting them off again and playing them is always interesting, and it's interesting to talk about how games went wrong, because I think you focus on the on, you look back at the past and you can see the mistakes they made. That's how you avoid making mistakes in the future, or you see good ideas and say, well, this is something they should bring back. So there's always value in going back to these old games, good or bad, just to see what they're like and just mess around. Even a bad game, I'll mess around with it for a while and just have fun in a twisted kind of way, if you will, and it won't make it back into my rotation. It won't become a favorite if it's that bad. But yeah, no, I'll definitely dust it off and play it again. But my opinion is, yes, that they definitely erred with that one. Those two, I should say.
You know you're not feeling a game when you originally play it and you're like, okay, this isn't good. And then years later, you revisit it and you're like, all right, yeah, this really isn't good. And then years later, again, you revisit it and you're like, yeah, this isn't a good game. You know that that's not the game for you.
You weren't having a
If you're
bad
revisit.
day. You weren't biased. Yeah, you were right about it, basically, yeah. So thank you once again to Sega Geek Navarre for that. Please stay tuned for my Wayback Wednesday at some point. I'll try and get to that one perhaps in the next couple of months after the ones I've already got scheduled. Once again, I've got the NBA Showtime retrospective coming out. That is a game that holds up a lot better than those, Derek. Midway was doing a much better job continuing the NBA Jam franchise without the NBA Jam name.
I love NBA Showtime. I'm a big fan of it. Like I said, it's right up there with my favorite arcade basketball video games of all time. I really enjoy it. They did a great job.
And you know, even EA's games on Fire Edition and the NBA Jam 2010 reboot, far better than anything that Claim ever did.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I still would like to see a new arcade basketball game come into space. We do have one that we've talked about on prior podcasts that's coming out soon. Will that scratch my itch? It may not. And the only reason I'm wondering about that is because of you said like you could have a hockey player and then he uses his stick and stuff like that. I'm not sure that's 100% for me, but we'll see. Maybe I'll enjoy it. I'm more of the NBA Jam, NBA Playgrounds type. But I might love it. And you know what the important thing is that people love it. Like the majority of, the basketball, the people who get their hands on the product, basically, the people who buy it, that they're really enjoying their experience.
Absolutely. That is, of course, Ultimate Rivals, The Court, which will be coming out at some point this year. And we will continue to cover that as more information previews come through. But it does have us intrigued, at the very least. So we will see what happens there. Our second and final question this week comes from Josh and Dave at Nemo Gamer. Once again, just released that great update for Basketball Classics, adding roster editing to the game. The question is, and you know what, Josh and Dave, I feel friends of the show, Derek, fair to say?
Oh, no, absolutely. We've had them on a couple times, and I hope they come on again soon to talk about like what they're working on with the game, their updates, and how excited they are about that.
Good guys, we like them.
Yeah, I think they're great guys. I haven't seen anything that, they might disagree with my food choices, but
we'll have to ask them next time they're on the show, hopefully. We think they're, on top of their game being fantastic, we think they're a couple of good blokes. But, I look at this question, and this is trying to drive a wedge between us, because there's going to be a series that comes up that we're going to butt heads on here, Derek. But the question is, just played Streets of Rage 4, incredible game, got me thinking about sequels. The best game sequels seem to keep the good and expand on it while learning from mistakes. I feel like Showtime did that really well. Your thoughts on video game sequels, good and bad? And of course, we can talk about basketball games and other genres here, I think, when we talk about video game sequels. Because just like movie sequels, some of them seem very unnecessary or they're disappointing. And of course, with the annual games coming every year, but games like A Jam do have sequels and throughout the years peppered. Showtime obviously is a game that we both have quite high opinions of, but sequels in general to games, Derek, how do you feel, and what are some that stand out as very good and very bad sequels?
Wow. So I have a lot of, you know, good feelings about certain sequels. Like, I'll put it this way. I think Mario 2 and Mario 3 were great games. However, there's certain ones that never should have been made. Remember you had said that, like, NBA Jam Extreme didn't work because one of the reasons why it didn't work is because they tried, like, a new... They tried to make it, like, 3D, like, a certain 3D look, and... They were, you know, just getting into that technology and et cetera, and it just didn't work, right?
Yeah, Acclaim got the name, and they stuck it on their idea of NBA Jam, because they had done the home ports of NBA Jam, right. But then they got the name, and then they did Extreme. Midway did Hang Time, and Hang Time was much better, became Showtime, et cetera. Yeah, they didn't know what they were doing, quite frankly.
Earthworm Jim, when they tried to make Earthworm Jim 3D, it was a nightmare.
Oof, yeah.
Like, they went, so that's a sequel where they had the Earthworm Jim and Earthworm Jim 2 and whatnot for Sega Genesis, Super Nintendo. Those are some of the best side-scrollers ever made. They're just so good. The sound, we still, listen, this is weird that we do this, but Nick and I, my brother, we sometimes put on the soundtracks of those games for fun because they're just so good.
Oh, the title track of Earthworm Jim 2 is now stuck in my head, yeah.
Yeah, and the first Earthworm Jim is actually my favorite. But they tried to make it 3D, and that sequel sucked. I'm going to say that flat out. There's just no redeeming qualities in that game. The mechanics are terrible. The graphics look really weird. The story is not good. All of that. So that's an example of a bad sequel. An example of a sequel that went from 2D to 3D, we could do a whole show on this, that worked really well, is Castlevania. In fact, Castlevania Lord of Shadows and Lord of Shadows 2 are fantastic games. Those came out for the PS3 generation, and I beat Lord of Shadows 2 and about halfway through the original one, and the mechanics work and the graphics are great, and they still have some of the old lore with the game, so I think those are great.
I will say that the first foray into 3D, Castlevania on Nintendo 64, was crap. The first attempt wasn't good.
That was crap. Let me point something out. N64 had some really bad attempts.
Yeah, they've aged poorly. Even at the time, some of them were pretty bad, including Earthworm Jim 3D.
GoldenEye 007 is the exception to the rule with N64.
Ocarina of Time, I love. Yeah.
Right, Ocarina, exactly. There's like exactly. So like things like Zelda and whatnot. Those are exceptions. Another one that did really well when it went from 2D to 3D, at least for later games, is Ninja Gaiden. And Ninja Gaiden, we beat. The second one's my favorite for NES. Just an amazing game, amazing soundtrack. Really, really fun to play. Difficult, all of that stuff. And then they came out with, you know, PS3 versions of it, and they came out awesome. The gameplay is amazing. They're made by the same people who made the Devil May Cry series, etc. So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of sequels, I'm more in favor of sequels than against. But, man, there's certain... actually, I'm going to use an example. NBA Street Home Court, I'm not a big fan of.
Hmm.
I think NBA Street Volume 2 spoiled me. And I don't think that NBA Street Home Court really holds up, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mentioned that on a past podcast. So that's one. I'm trying to think of basketball games, though.
How do you feel about V3? You mentioned Home Court, but V3, of course, came out between Volume 2 and Home Court. It kind of peaked in many ways with Volume 2. And then V3 lost Michael Jordan, lost, I think, a couple of the legends as well. I don't like V3 as much as Volume 2.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah, I think that, again, it lost some of its uniqueness. It lost some of its flair. I can agree with that. But, you know, I'm trying to think of other games where I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe they ruined the series.
Well, I'll mention one that it's the one that drives the wedge between us, you know. So I'll address the elephant in the room. The Donkey Kong Country series. My favorite is 2, which I know scandalizes you, and which is not to say I don't enjoy 1.
No. Diddy Kong's Quest, that is one of the best side-scrollers ever made. I absolutely love that game. I beat it. It's amazing. I just don't think it's as good as 1.
Okay, fair enough. I prefer it to one which, again, it doesn't have Donkey Kong, which is, well, he is in the game, but he's the donkey in distress, the gorilla in distress, if you will. I think I like two better because of some of the mechanics that it added. Because both Diddy and Dixie are very spry with their speed and maneuverability, and also the more straightforward bonus rooms with the DK coins and the bonus coins and whatever. I prefer that. Three went a little bit too far, I think. I do enjoy three as well. I think it is the weakest of the trilogy. But yeah, I do prefer two over one, which is where we disagree, obviously. A friendly disagreement. I joke about driving a wedge. But that is one scenario that I know we disagree on. But there were sequels at the time. I mean, you look at a Zelda 2 on the NES, which is not a terrible game. It's unfairly maligned at times, but it is definitely different. It's the only side-scroller in the series, apart from the CDI games, which were terrible. Mario 2, of course, being originally Doki Doki Panic, and they put the Mario characters in there, and it changed things up as well, and Mario 3 was the best of that trilogy, I believe. So, and I also prefer Castlevania 3 to 2 as well. So I think a lot of the times the 3 game was really good. I also like Fallout 3, although it was my first Fallout game, so maybe I'm biased in that regard. It's funny that sometimes 3 is the game, but then again, not for Donkey Kong Country. I'd take 1 or 2 over that, most likely. Yeah, so it's certainly there are some sequels that are very worthy, and if it turns into a series... I mean, you look at that, the Donkey Kong Country games, you know, not to get too hung up on them, but they came out 3 consecutive years. 3 really big, impressive games, consecutive years from Rare. That was very impressive.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, another game that I was thinking of was Rayman. I think they've come up with really good sequels to Rayman, including Rayman Legends, which is a 2-player co-op game my brother and I are currently playing. What about Contra?
Yeah, Probotector, as it was known in Australia. I haven't played the sequels. I've only played the original.
Okay. Games, what about, like, Dragon Quest? You know, Dragon Quest, which is basically the old Dragon Warrior series. I think that they did a good job with some of them, and some of them were flops. So, it's, you know, Final Fantasy. I think Final Fantasy 15 was a flop. I don't think it was that great of a game. I think Final Fantasy 7 and 8 were amazing.
Certainly when it gets into a series, there's a bigger chance for more hit and miss when you're talking about an extended series that goes to many different iterations.
Oh yeah, exactly. And sometimes they rebound. Like, I think Final Fantasy has rebounded off of a couple bad releases for some good ones, or poor releases, etc., that I didn't really enjoy. Virtua Tennis, actually, I don't know if Josh and Dave ever played tennis video games, but I think Virtua Tennis went way downhill. With Virtua Tennis 4, I just think the gameplay is not as fun. There's less of a skill gap with it. It's not mechanically sound. It's not as deep. I think Virtua Tennis and Tennis 2K2 and Virtua Tennis 3 were far better. I think Virtua Tennis 4 was just not a good release, really, for them. So, yeah, I'm trying to think of any other big names or big games out there like Kirby and whatnot that I could comment on, but I'd have to, like, really... like dive deep into it and look at my collection. And
I was a big fan, and still am, of adventure games, the classic Sierra and LucasArts adventure games from back in the day. And a lot of those had sequels. I mean, there's so many King's Quest games. King's Quest was never my thing. I was more Leisure Suit Larry back in the day. Very naughty, playing that as a 10-year-old in the mid-90s. they had a lot of sequels of varying... they all have their own charm and some things that have aged in more ways than one aspects of them. You know, in some cases, the first game is still the classic. And in fact, the first game is the one that has been remade. The very first Leisure Suit Larry that came out in, what, 87, 88, is the one that's been remade the most. And in fact, they had the Reloaded game a few years back that Aldo was actually a part of, the creator of Leisure Suit Larry. Or Leisure Suit Larry, if you will. The first game is the one that's sort of the installment that sticks in everybody's mind, either that or the last one, ironically, the last one that he made, 7. So a lot of them had a lot of sequels. Day of the Tentacle was a sequel to Maniac Mansion, and it was a very worthy sequel. In fact, you didn't even have to play Maniac Mansion really to get into that game. But then you've got a game like Sam and Max Hit the Road, which is the only one. Well, they had the Telltale games later on, but they had that that first one from 92, 93 that just stands alone as from that era. No official sequels as such to that game. And there was one planned, but apparently it wasn't very good. Sometimes it's lightning in a bottle, just like movies. I mean, you look at the original Ghostbusters is held in high regard. Ghostbusters 2, people don't like it as much. So it's one of those things where if the concept is so good and so well done, if you can't really build upon the concept, be it a sequel to the movie or if it's just the same game over and over again, then, it does falter in that regard.
Yeah, what Terminator movie has lived up to Terminator 2?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, I mean, like, also, one game that I'd really like to see put in 3D, attempted in 3D, or at least brought to life, better graphic side-scroller with similar gameplay. I'd love to see Boogerman come back. And I don't know if people remember that game, Josh and Dave. Look it up if you haven't played it and whatnot. It was called a pick-and-flick adventure. But Boogerman for Sega Genesis is one of the best side-scrollers I've ever played. I just really like the gameplay, the concept, the characters, the graphic design, how difficult it was, just all the mechanics of it. It's a really good game, and I'm surprised they never came out with a new Boogerman. But I guess maybe because it's called Boogerman. But it was a really fun game.
Yeah,
it was a very fun game. I enjoyed it.
Toe Jam and Earl, you know, it's one of those 90s things. Although they did bring that back, didn't they? They did make a new one.
I think they may have. I'm just fairly certain they didn't bring back
Boogerman.
Boogerman. I just recently realized that they brought Punch Out back. So, two of my favorite games, sports games ever, are the original Punch Out and Super Punch Out. I think both of those games are. I think Super Punch Out is one of the best sequels ever to a game like that was as good as the original Punch Out. Like the original Punch Out, Mike Tyson's Punch Out, or without him, is one of the best video games ever made, the NES version. Mm. And they came out with Super Punch-Out for Super NES, and it just was so awesome. The amount of hours I put into Super Punch-Out was unreal. The characters were great. The gameplay was just as good or better than the original. It had depth. It had time trials, all of that stuff. Really interesting characters, great soundtrack, sound effects, all of that stuff. Super Punch-Out, I would say, is one of the best sequels ever made. But I found out recently that they came out with Punch-Outs for, I want to say, mobile.
There was a Wii version as well. It had Donkey Kong in it, actually.
Right. And I didn't know that. So I might have to try those at some point.
You know, I'm looking back at the question as it was posed to us, and it is right there in the question. The best game sequels seem to keep the good and expand on it while learning from mistakes. And absolutely, when it is just the same game over and over again, or a rehash. You look at all the Street Fighter 2, all the versions of Street Fighter 2, you know, they are technically sequels or expansions or revisions to each other, and yet it's all under the 2 branding. I think Mortal Kombat is a game. I love Mortal Kombat. I mentioned Mortal Kombat 11 earlier, but there are definitely some games in that series that were better than others. 2 is still very highly regarded as far as the original trilogy is concerned, or indeed Mortal Kombat trilogy that came out on 64 and PlayStation and PC as well, but it lost its way here and there, and for different reasons of you know, whether they added mechanics that were trying to innovate but they weren't really the right kind of innovations, and of course we've seen that in basketball games, the annual basketball games, so many times. But yeah, it is always disappointing when they bring out that sequel but they either change too much or not enough.
So I wanted to bring up one more thing as an example. Sometimes these companies just try to milk the character. It doesn't matter, you know, the mechanics are thrown out the window, the storyline is thrown out the window. It's like, hey, listen, we can just throw this crap against the wall. It will stick, and people are going to buy it. Even if they don't like the game, they're going to buy it originally, right? And nothing is further proof of that than, and I'm going to use movies as an example, is The Mask. So the original The Mask with Jim Carrey was an awesome movie. Great story. You know, he's obviously, it's Jim Carrey. He was great in the movie. Great character build up. People loved it. Kids loved it. Adults loved it. Then they came out with Revenge of the Mask without Jim Carrey, without the great storyline, without the great acting. And it sucked.
Was that Jamie Kennedy? Was that Jamie Kennedy in that one?
I can't even remember who was. It was just, it was that bad. I tuned it out. Then they came out. They were like, you know what? Revenge of the Mask wasn't bad enough. We're going to come out with Son of the Mask. And they came out with a movie called Son of the Mask with one of the actors who was in Scream as like the main character with the mask and whatnot. And it was even worse than Revenge of the Mask. But guess what? A lot of people bought it. A lot of people tuned into it. A lot of people went in to see it just because it had the mask in it. So they didn't care about quality at that point. It was like, we're going to throw this against the wall. We're going to use the mask's name and we're going to put it out there and people are going to buy it. And that's what happens a lot with video games too.
I mean, Sonic the Hedgehog games would probably be a good example here.
Superman for N64. They were like, you know what? This game is going to make no sense. This game, you're going to fly through rings. The controls are going to be, we're not going to work that hard on making the controls great. It's going to have no real story. It's not going to follow the real life story at all. But guess what? The name is called Super. It's called Superman. So we're going to bankroll off of the Superman name. And I think that's what happens. And that game is one of the worst of all time. I think that's what they do, is they bank off the name.
I'm just looking at Son of the Mask was that was the Jamie Kennedy one. Yeah, 2005.
Yeah, he was in Scream 2, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, again, nothing compared to the original with Jim Carrey and Cameron Diaz at all. The animated series was okay. Things like that, when they were doing the animated series of everything, that wasn't too bad.
Yeah, I think sometimes when they make animated series, sometimes they can work, and then sometimes they can be gigantic flops. I was trying to think of one that I grew up with, and I was like, hey, you know what, this isn't that bad.
Beetlejuice.
Come back to it.
You know, you mentioned Jim Carrey, of course. There was two Ace Ventura movies. The second one is probably not as well. I don't know. I like the second one as well.
I think When Nature Calls is by far better. I'm a fan of Ace Ventura 2.
Over Pet Detective.
Yes. Yeah. We quote When Nature Calls a lot more than Pet Detective.
You know, I might actually myself as well. Yeah, we both like the second one in that respect. That also had an animated spin-off as well, which had a crossover with The Mask. So that was quite an interesting time in animation.
Stuff like The Turtles, where they had the cartoon first and then they tried to make it a 3D movie. I mean, like a movie with actors
Live action,
of that stuff. Yeah, so it's interesting.
So the sequels are, whether they be movies or video games, I agree. If there's a new idea that I can expand upon with the story, with video games, if it's new mechanics, if they can improve that as well, it's certainly worth it. I mean, you and I, we play annual basketball games which have, I don't want to say minimal improvements, sometimes it certainly feels that way, be it legacy issues or simply the fact that there's not enough time within 12 months to make a whole brand new game. Not that you always need to anyway, but as far as the games that come out with a few years in between, you certainly do want to make that sequel worthy to the original game and to expand on the story, to expand on the mechanics, to make sure it's just as fun and maybe add a few new wrinkles. You look at an Earthworm Jim 2, did add some new controls, some new attacks there, new weapons. Obviously, Donkey Kong Country added new collectibles, some new characters. Kitty Kong kind of sucked. He was like Donkey Kong without the charm in DKC3. But you need to have a good idea. Don't just ride on the name, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, and we've seen that many times before where series just were banking on the name and they flopped, so.
And of course, since it is Josh and Dave bringing up the question, I will bring up not just Bart versus the Space Mutants, but Bart versus the World. So there you go.
Right, and don't make Basketball Classics 2 and have it suck.
Well, as I say, they're at the top of the show. They're updating it all the time.
Yeah, no, I think it's great what they're doing. And I'll definitely be in the market if they ever decide to make a Basketball Classics 2. Maybe make, like, a Super Nintendo-type graphic system and whatnot. I will definitely be on board for buying that as well. So anything to add to the collection would be great.
I'm just going to throw out the suggestion of Basketball Classics 2 Hoop Harder as a subtitle.
That's not bad. I mean, we could come up. Maybe we could do a vote on the NLSC or something. I have a couple things in mind.
We'll see what we can come up with. But thank you once again to the guys from Namo Gamo, Josh and Dave, Namo_Gamo on both Instagram and Twitter. And of course, you can check out Possible Classics on Steam. But yes, that has brought us to the end of the mailbag and the end of episode number 372 of the NLSC podcast. Once again, if you have any topic suggestions or questions for the mailbag, podcast@mb-live.com or our socials that we'll be reading off shortly. But before we get to that, of course, the podcast comes out every week on the NLSC, which is mb-live.com. We're also on the major podcatching apps and platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, to name just a few. On those platforms, search for NLSC Podcast, look for our logo, and that will be us. Subscribe to get the show delivered to your device of choice each and every week, or once again, keep streaming on the NLSC, of course. As long as you're tuning in each and every week and enjoying the show, that is the main thing. And yes, Derek, it has come time for us to plug our socials.
Absolutely. Tune into Holding Court with Deep3. We'll be releasing episode 17, hopefully this week. Also, catch up with me on Twitter, where I'm the most active at D4384, and my new handle, we're dedicated to just basketball gaming, at D43G, at the G stands for gaming, automatically picked by Twitter, thank you. And I'm on YouTube, D43, on the NLSC, D43, and on Instagram, D4384.
As I said at the top of the show, I am Andrew NLSC on Twitter, Andrew in the forum, of course. The NLSC is on Twitter and Facebook, at the NLSC. On Instagram, we are NLSC Basketball. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/NBLiveSeriesCenter. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, NB-Live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that's all for this week, so thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.